to the Judo Edit podcast, where I'll be taking you behind the scenes of the international judo circuit in order to bring you closer to the athletes and help you get better with your own judo. I'm your host, Melissa Budiato, and today we're continuing part two of the interview with Leilani Akiyama, under 57 kilogram representative from the United States. Now, this is a very broad but entertaining episode. We talk about everything from self-imposed mind tricks to increase self-discipline, using judo in childhood self-defense situations, and getting into your opponent's heads when training with them before a competition. So let's jump straight back into it. Okay, let's talk about that first 3 months mm-hmm. when you were in Japan. Apart from finding out about yourself that you needed to be happy, yeah. what did you learn either physically or mentally at the end of doing that training trip?
So I basically learned the whole judo motto is like, for real, the minimum effort, maximum efficiency. You don't really like get a lot of that in the U.S.
Yeah.
A lot of it's like, oh, you gotta work hard, like, you gotta lift a ton of weight, you know, you have to, like, do this and that and get, like, physically the best. Like, it's really not. I mean, yeah, all of that helps. It's great to be stronger than them. Like, that always helps to be stronger than them. But you don't always have to be in yeah. order to win. In yeah. order to throw someone, you don't have to be, like, stronger. You can be smaller. You can be weaker. It's... Judo is that way where you don't have to be, like,
yeah.
the biggest and the strongest. Because I fought 63s for such a long time, mm-hmm. even after that. And I was always the smallest.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's okay. They're a foot taller than me, but I'm going to just try to fight. Like, it's judo. I can do it, right?
Yeah.
And then now that I'm, like, you know, getting to the top tier tournaments, mm-hmm. you got to find all of the advantages you can.
Yeah.
So being bigger uh-huh. is an advantage.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah.
When everybody has similar skill levels.
Right, exactly.
You need that differentiation.
Right. And so moving down was a really good idea on yeah. my part.
Okay. Well, let's circle back to moving down a bit later. I suppose let's just contrast, you know, your first trip to Japan with the past week that you spent in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
What's, apart from the university that you've been training at, what's been different? What's your whole mental state been like on this trip?
Yeah, I just know that I only need to be here for a week. And I know I'm going to leave. Like, the other day how we did 50 Newaza rounds. Like, Ippon Dori Newaza rounds, which was the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I just knew that I was not a part of the, you know, a part of the group.
Yeah.
And so I could just kind of, like, watch these girls instead of, like,
yeah.
being stressed and crying with them. Like, they were, some of them, like, had cried, like, were crying at the end. Mm. But I know I'm not, like, I can just separate myself. And
yeah.
so being able to separate myself was, like, a huge thing,
yeah.
I guess. But this week has been, I just came so that I can get more rounds in Randori
yeah.
before my tournament next week. And it was hard, it's hard for me to find that, like, you know, this
yeah.
many rounds in the U.S.
So I suppose just for context, we'd maybe do average 15 rounds of Randori a session this week?
I mean, yeah, average, yeah. average, like, 10 standing, and like maybe 15 yeah. Newaza.
Yeah, maybe. I think it was a bit more at the beginning of the week. They've been tapering
yeah,
a little
yeah.
bit.
Yeah.
Except for that crazy night when we did 50
right. You, and then even before the session, you were like, I think they're going to start tapering. And then we had to do 50 rounds. And I was like, are you sure they're tapering? Because this does not feel like tapering.
Yeah. Well, I suppose even then that was a one-off, right?
Yeah.
Like...
I know, and, like, I asked one of the girls, I'm like, what's going on? And she's like, he's mad at us. It's like, okay, I can tell.
Yeah, and as someone who went through the 50 rounds, once you're sort of in them, it's okay, just, like, gotta keep going, you know?
Right, right.
But yeah, afterwards you're like, shit, that was a lot of randori.
Yeah. Well, I was just like, after 20, I was like, nope, I'm done. That was a lot for me. And then I watched 30 more rounds, like, yeah. Girls doing Newaz. I'm like, well, I mean, I'm tapering, so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that separation really helps, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know if I answered your question.
I don't know. I can't even remember what my question was.
I can't either.
Okay, so training, essentially just, did you get out of this week what you needed to?
Yeah.
Preparing for your competition.
Yeah, it was a really good week. I got a lot of rounds in, and every round a girl will run up to me and, like, want to go. So it was great. I don't have to, like, beg for rounds and, like, search for rounds and drive 3 hours for rounds. So, no, it was really good.
Yeah, and I think the amazing thing about doing training in Japan, despite how difficult it is the abundance of training partners.
Right. So you have, like, a fresh person. Well, I guess they're not fresh because they just got off the mat. But you have a new person basically every round, and it was so good.
Yeah. So for a bit of context, we've been training this week, about 30 girls on the mat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As opposed to at home, you'd have how many women on the mat?
No girls. Like maybe one on Friday.
Yeah.
But usually I go with like boys, like lightweight men. Yeah. And I like fighting girls better. Of obviously, because, you know, the strength factor. But I like, I always forget that I have to fight girls before a tournament because, like, I'll go to a tournament and be like, oh, yeah, that's right, I fight girls. Like,
yeah.
And it's completely different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are the ways that you find it's the most different, or what catches you off guard?
Like, I would say the speed and style.
Yeah.
For sure.
So you definitely want to be going to a competition knowing that you've adjusted to that.
Right.
Rather than fighting like a man.
Right.
Cool. So, in terms of your mindset and your motive, like how you keep yourself motivated in between competitions,
mm-hmm.
Just training, even like back at home,
mm-hmm.
what do you sort of, do you do anything actively to try and prepare yourself mentally?
Well, okay, so this Olympics, this 2020 Olympics is going to be my last run.
Okay.
Because I am a little bit older. I won't say how old I am, but I am a little bit older. So this is my last try.
Okay.
And knowing that it's my last try, I don't have the same spirit as I did for 2016.
Okay.
But I still have enough spirit, I guess, to keep going.
Okay.
And I'm thinking if I'm going to keep going and spend all this money and spend all this time and sacrifice so much of my life for it, like, might as well just give it my all.
Yeah.
So that's my motivation. And also, you know, my mom has been helping me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think about my mom and how I want to do this for her and how she's going to feel like this was all worth it in the end. Because it is hard. Not only just, it's mostly, you know, just money and time and having to, you know, always have that stress of like, okay, another tournament is coming up. And then, you know, being like that supportive person is a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm asking for a lot. And I want to be able to give back to her in that way. Because she believes in me, and she always has. Like, she's probably my biggest fan.
Yeah. That's so good. And she was the one that got you into judo in the
mm-hmm.
first place.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I read, like, a recent interview that you did where, you know, they asked you, who's the first person you'd call after you win a medal?
Mm-hmm.
And you said, my mom.
Yeah, my mom. Because she's so proud of me, like, no matter what I do. I mean, like, you know, especially if I win.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, being able to share that moment with her is, like, everything.
Yeah.
Because, like, she works so hard so that I can do this.
Yeah. And I suppose we have a lot of parents as well who listen to this podcast. So what are the things that your mom has done that you feel has been the most beneficial in supporting you?
I mean, everything I feel like she does is for me. So even at this age, and even though I've been living away from home for a while,
yeah.
I feel like she's still working, like she hasn't retired yet, and yeah. she's at that age where she probably should retire soon,
yeah.
but she still keeps working in order to help support me.
Yeah.
And I work too, but, you know, she, like, everything she does, I feel like, is for me and for my dream. Like, I would say it's our dream, you know?
Yeah.
The Olympic dream is our dream.
Yeah. And it's so amazing, you know, judo being an individual sport, but there are so many people behind the scenes.
Right, yeah. Yeah, there's so many people. Because you need so much in order, because it is an individual sport,
yeah.
you need the support, like, on the sidelines, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, for sure.
So, like, my mom, my boyfriend, my dog, my dog Peanut. and then just, like, because it is such a rough sport, like, physical therapy and being able to, you know, be put back together
yeah.
after a hard, you know, like, hard practice or hard tournament. Yeah.
So, you obviously, you just mentioned doing physical therapy.
Mm-hmm.
You've had a decently long career, enough to have a list of injuries.
Yeah. A lot, yes.
And you recently told me how you injured your finger.
Okay, yeah.
It was quite, like, a story of resilience, and would you mind sharing it?
Yeah, sure. So, for the listeners, you cannot see my finger. It's on my left hand, but
yeah.
it does not completely straightened, and it's, like, a big, like, knuckle, basically. Yeah, it doesn't straighten, and it's always gonna be bent, and it's gonna be always, like, kind of fat.
Basically, it doesn't look like a normal finger.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. There's, like, a giant, like, ball where the, you know. Anyways, so it was during the nationals. I was in the finals, and I was winning. So during that match, I look down, and I see my finger, and it's all, like, gnarled, like, bent and out, like, you know, twisted. And I looked down, and I was like, oh, my God. Like, it scared me looking at it, but I had not yet felt the pain of it,
mm-hmm.
Which will come later. So I looked down, and I was like, oh, my God, my finger. But I was, like, winning, and I only had, you know, a couple minutes left, or a minute left on the clock, and so I'm like, okay, I just need to just hold on to the score, just keep going. So just kept going through it, and I won that match, and I came off the mat, and I went straight to the first aid, and I, like, showed them my finger, and they're like, oh my God, because it was, like, so twisted and so bent and, like, gnarled, and
wow.
So yeah.
When you freak out first aid, it's
I know,
not a great sign.
Yeah, it was, yeah, it was quite the finger.
Oh my gosh. And so, yeah, you keep going, like, I suppose, through all these injuries, and you've made sacrifices, your mom's made sacrifices
mm-hmm.
for this Olympic goal. What about the Olympics entrances you? What does it mean to you?
So, the Olympics, not only is it the pinnacle of our sport, it's so hard to qualify. It's top, gonna, you know, 18 now for a woman to qualify. So, not only is it, like, super hard to, and that's, like, everyone's goal, mm-hmm. it's, like, so exclusive, you know, and you're, like, an Olympian for the rest of your life once you make that.
Yeah.
That sounds like my dream since I was a kid. So yeah. I want to say it was, like, the 1996 Atlanta Olympics. And I watched, like, the opening ceremonies and the closing ceremonies. And even as, like, a little kid, I was, like, crying.
Yeah.
Just, like, crying, watching, like, these people, like, you know, finally reached their goal.
Yeah.
And I was like just crying as a child. And I was like, that's what I want to do. Like, I want that too, you know?
Yeah.
So ever since then, I was like, yeah, that's what I want. Like, Olympics.
Yeah. So you're super goal-driven as a person.
Mm-hmm. That's otherwise, I'm kind of lazy. But that goal in particular, yeah.
Yeah. No, but it's about optimizing the parts of your life that matter.
Right.
That's really good. So I suppose apart from having the Olympics in mind, what are the other things that motivate you or inspire you?
Outside of judo?
Yeah, let's go with outside of judo.
So if you know me, I talk about my dog a lot.
Okay.
So everyone knows about Peanut. He's my rescue dog. He rescued me.
He adopted you.
Yeah, he adopted me. No, I just love dogs and I love animals. Yeah. And being able to help them is, yeah, like one of my biggest motivations, like outside of judo. Uh-huh. And so this sounds like I sound crazy when I say this, I know, but I want to be a physio for dogs.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, when dogs get hit by cars or, you know, strays get hit by cars, they become paralyzed from the waist down, or, you know, those dogs,
yeah,
like, they get, like, those wheels.
Yeah.
Or dogs that are getting older, then their spine is, like, starting to degenerate, yeah, and then they're having trouble walking. So being able to, like, go, you know, exercise them and the right exercises in order for them to keep walking, I guess.
Yeah.
And like having like a better life.
Yeah. One of the things I've sort of noticed about these people who are top performers, they sort of seem to have like a purpose, like, or multiple purposes which draw them, which aren't necessarily directly in their sport.
Mm-hmm.
But like they're like, oh, I want to help this person.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do this, and it sort of fuels that fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. So oh, let's go back to the changing weight divisions, 57
okay.
kilos.
Okay.
You know, that's a 6 kilo difference,
mm-hmm,
just between weight classes, but there's, mm-hmm, obviously a lot that goes on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
From an everyday perspective, what did you do differently?
So, I'm a huge foodie.
Mm-hmm.
I love food so much, so it's been so hard for me,
yeah,
to make this lifestyle change,
yeah,
but it really is a lifestyle change. You can't just like, oh, I have a tournament coming up, so yeah, I have to like now start dieting. It's kind of like you're always kind of on this diet, and it's a constant thing.
Yeah.
So I always have to kind of keep my weight down in order for me to make the weight.
Yeah.
So I really miss carbs. I love carbs and I really miss it. And being in Japan, it has been so hard because everything is a carb here.
Yeah.
Like noodles, like dumplings, just everything, rice, you know, everything, yeah, is a carb. So it's been really hard. I eat a lot of vegetables,
mm-hmm,
and I eat a lot of mints. Mint is, it's an appetite suppressant.
Yeah.
So that's been helping a lot. And then just like, you know, I drink a ton of water too.
Yeah.
I drink a lot of water and I sweat a lot. So it's been easier for me to make the weight than I think other girls, because I sweat a ton. So I sweat maybe like 2.5 kilos,
yeah,
to make the weight, maybe 3 kilos. And I'm able to do that and recover fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really a lifestyle change.
Yeah. And that sort of goes hand in hand with being an elite athlete, right? You always,
mm-hmm,
have to maintain self-discipline,
mm-hmm,
around your life.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I do binge, like I do let myself binge a little bit, but I have like a cutoff date, so right, I'll like be like, okay, this is my last meal.
Yeah.
You know, I'll only like let, so I'll come back from China and I'll go out to dinner with my boyfriend.
Yeah.
And I'll let myself eat whatever.
Yeah.
Because like mentally, that's gonna be so taxing if you're always trying to be on a diet.
Yeah.
But I do have a cutoff date. I'm like, okay, I can only do this for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And then I'm back on my diet.
Yeah. So it's sort of like a mental reset.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Because if you're always just, like, not eating carbs, like, how crazy would you get?
I'm actually very surprised at how happy of a person you are without carbs.
Oh, like, it's taken a really long time, because when I used to cut weight, I would be the grumpiest person in the world.
Yeah.
But now I'm just like, oh, this is just how I feel. It's fine. And yeah. I'm just like, try to act normal. Yeah. Like a normal human. And yeah, I don't know. I haven't been very grumpy. Yeah. Like, since moving down to 57s. I don't know. Maybe my boyfriend can tell you that I have been grumpy. But I don't feel that grumpy.
Yeah. And so, when you're sort of in that diet phase, you've already, like, had your reset sort of, mm-hmm. you know, free meals, whatever. Mm-hmm. You're now, like, you've got a competition coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And you really hit a point where you're just craving something.
Yeah.
Like, what are the strategies that you use to keep yourself on track?
I love looking at food. So I was telling you before that why deprive my other senses of food when I can just, you know, look at the food, smell it, like, ask you to describe it. Like, all of the people that I follow on Instagram are mostly food.
Yeah.
So, like, it's gonna be, like, I'm just scrolling through and it's all, like, pictures of food, videos of food. I just, like, that's how I cope, though. Because I'm just, like, I don't want to, like, shut myself off from food in general. Because I feel like that would make me crazier.
Yeah.
Yeah, and crave it more.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just can't taste it, you know? That's the one sense I can't do, is taste it.
Yeah.
And I have all these other senses. It's fine.
Yeah. I find that so both hilarious and just, like, makes me curious as to want to try it.
Yeah, you should.
Like, I wonder what it would be like to be like, just smell the food, do not eat it, but then doing it on purpose.
Yeah. I mean, and then sometimes, like, when I'm really, really deprived, I imagine what it tastes like. Like, I imagine, like, I close my eyes and I imagine what this picture of food tastes like in my mouth. And I'm like, yeah, that's really good. Like, and so I, like, kind of imagine eating it.
Yeah.
And I actually don't eat it. And it's helped I mean, I think that's, like, borderline, like, not okay.
Yeah.
I think it's better to just, like, look at it and just smell it rather than, like, imagining it, because it's not as good.
I can't say I've imagined food in that way, mm-hmm. but I have had times when I've been about to go to a competition and, like, maybe 2 days before the weigh-in, I have a dream that I'm eating, like, a ton of food,
mm-hmm.
and I wake up, like, freaking out.
That you did or something? Yeah.
Has that ever happened to
you? Yes! And I always have these, like, nightmares, too, of missing weight. Oh. Like, I'm sure every judoka has had this nightmare.
Yeah.
But, like, I'll be dreaming, and I'm like, oh, man, I have to make weight. And then I'll step on the scale, and it'll say, like, 70 kilos.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, my God. I can't believe I let myself get up to 70 kilos. And I have... And this is the weigh-in. Right now is the weigh-in. That is, like...
What a nightmare.
Yeah, that is the nightmare. I have that reoccurring. Really? Yeah. That I'll keep missing weight because I'm 70 kilos. Rather than the 57 I'm supposed to be. And weigh-ins is right now. Like, I don't have time to go cut it, which probably would be impossible anyways.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's my nightmare.
There you go. If you ever want to scare Leilani on Halloween, just give her a scale with 70 kilos on it every time she steps on it. Like, just rig it. Okay, so last few things as we sort of wrap up. Dug up a little detail that you've only been in a real fight once in fourth grade. Is that true?
I have to like think. I know about that. I know what you're asking about. It was on the playground and this kid came up to me and he had like a giant stick and he was trying to hit me with it.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, recess. It was on the playground. So, it was, I guess, I don't know if that's normal. I don't know if that's like a common thing that happens. But I basically threw him because he tried to hit me with the stick. And my, you know, Osoto worked very well on him. So, yeah, that's the only time, I think.
It was in self-defense. There was a big stick coming.
Yes, it was self-defense. So it wasn't really a fight.
No, it wasn't. that's great, though. It's always good to see when judo comes in handy.
Yeah. I mean, Ashi works so well on people, I'm sure.
Yeah. And if you think about it, using judo as a form of self-defense is actually quite a safe form because you're not trying to, you know, bash their head into the cement, like, or bash their head in with a fist. You're just trying to subdue them so they can't hurt you anymore.
Yeah, but if you throw someone, I mean, like, if someone threw me on concrete, I'd be like, yeah, I'm dead. But, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, okay. It might depend on the context.
Yeah.
Okay, so, lastly, oh, not lastly, sorry, just another question which I forgot to ask before.
Mm-hmm.
What has been your favourite failure in terms of something that you have maybe messed up, but then you've learnt from it and it's made you better?
So I was at Olympic trials in 2004, and that was a really long time ago, but I was at Olympic trials and I was only like, I'm not gonna say actually, I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And I lost to someone I have never lost to in order to become the alternate, basically. Well, in order to fight the top girl, and then she lost and she became alternate. Anyways, I lost to this girl that I've never lost to, and I'm still kind of bitter about it. I'm a little salty about that one. But I think losing that day really helped me because, like, I probably would have quit judo after that.
Yeah.
Because I had accomplished my goal.
Yeah.
And I would not be as good.
Yeah.
Or have learned judo the way I know judo now.
Mm-hmm.
And I would not have, because back then all you had to do was win Olympic trials in order to go to the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have to travel around the world. You didn't have to, like, go get points. You didn't have to, like, go to all these different camps. You just had to be number one in the U.S. to go.
Yeah.
And so with that, I learned a lot. Like, I've traveled a ton.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gotten so much better at judo than I was at that time.
Yeah.
And so I kind of, like, I've thought about this. I've imagined myself at that time. Like, I didn't know shit back then.
Yeah.
I thought I was awesome, but I was not. I thought I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
And thinking, like, knowing what I know now, like, I just, maybe it was a good thing that I didn't make it. Like, obviously, it would have been great if I had made it.
Yeah.
But if I had, like, because I had not, mm-hmm. like, I know so much more.
Mm.
And then I did.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really amazing. I love that.
Yeah.
That, you know, you haven't even, like, I suppose you haven't reached that goal yet. You're on the way, but you can already see the success of your growth throughout the journey.
Right. Yeah, like, I mean, I had way more to learn, and I had no idea. Like, at that time, I had no idea that I still had so much more to learn and so much longer judo, like, judo lifespan, I guess.
Yeah.
So, it would have been great to make it, obviously.
Yeah.
But maybe it wasn't.
Yeah. Well, let's see how you go in the next 2 years and you might still get there.
Yeah.
Like, you would have, like, achieved everything. You could have gotten growth, you'd gotten the goal.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah. So,
I mean, this is the hard way, I guess, to make it. I have to do the hard, like, everything has to be, like, the hard way.
But that's how you know you've earned it.
Right.
Okay, so last question. If these guys can look up one video where they can see you fight, or one fight that you're pretty proud of, can be from any time in your career, what fight would it be?
Yeah, I guess I can't really think of anything but Antalya, because those are the only videos that I've been kind of, like, you know, replaying. I mean, there are a couple matches there that I did lose, and it wasn't my best. but my first match was against a Brazilian girl.
Okay.
And that was, I mean, I was able to throw her with Uchimata, which is, like, my favorite. So, I guess maybe that one.
Do you remember what her name was? Was it Silva?
No, it was, no. No, it was not Silva.
That would definitely have been a highlight.
It was Crudes. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's C-R-U-D-E-S.
I will look it up and link it to the show notes.
Yeah, I mean, during that week leading up to that match, actually, we did a training camp in Georgia for a week before we moved on to Antalya.
Yeah.
Because I did the Georgian Grand Prix, the Tbilisi Grand Prix, the weekend prior. Mm-hmm. And during that week, I only fought her and this other Brazilian girl, because it was such a small camp that we didn't really have that many people to go with. So I had those two. Every day, twice a day, I fought those two girls.
Yeah.
And I knew, for some reason, that week, I was like, I feel like I'm going to draw one of these girls.
Yeah.
And so all week, my biggest goal was to get in their heads and just beat them down. And it sounds crazy, but I just knew.
Yeah.
And so I was just relentless.
Yeah.
Like, I would be in their face, like, just drag them, just rough them up.
Yeah.
And I, by the end of the week, I had accomplished my goal of, like, being in their heads and kind of, I was just like, I'm just gonna, like, already be in their head so that I mentally, like, won, basically.
Yeah.
Which sounds like a crazy person, but
but it's not. If you're in sport, that is sport.
I just heard myself say that, and I was like, wow, that sounded really crazy. But I was basically in their heads.
Yeah.
And I, no joke, drew one of them first round in Antalya.
Yeah.
And I already knew that I had won.
Yeah.
Like, even before the match, I was like, I already know that I won this match.
Yeah.
Because I threw her so many times during the camp, and, like, I was just relentless, always just, like, trying to keep throwing her.
Yeah.
And so before the match, I just already knew. And during the match, I could just tell that she knew that I could throw her.
Yeah.
So, and then I did. And so it worked out great for me.
Oh, I love it. What a backstory. So I think our hour is up. If people want to get in touch with you, if people want to follow your journey or sponsor you, or if your story resonates with them, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
So probably on my Instagram, it's Leilanimal. It's Leilanimal. I'm more active on my Instagram than my Facebook, but Facebook too, Leilani Akiyama.
And we'll keep an eye out for you. What do you have coming up?
I will be going to Worlds in September.
Okay.
Under 57s.
Yep. Sounds good. Well, everyone keep an eye out for Leilani Akiyama at Worlds in September.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I hope you had as much fun listening to that episode as we had recording it. Now, if you haven't heard the first part of the interview, definitely go back and hear about how Leilani got started in judo and her highlights growing up in the sport. And if you've enjoyed this podcast and this episode, tell your friends and hit share on Facebook, because that will help me to continue to create better content for you and hopefully bring you more exciting judo interviews in the next episodes. So it's been a pleasure having you listening. This is Melissa Budiato signing off.